Hi, this is episode number 50, which is so sick and so crazy. Like, I honestly wasn't sure that I'd ever want to keep doing this. Like, even after doing like the first, I think it probably took me like 10 or 15 episodes at least to get under my belt before I actually felt comfortable doing this. And now we're on 50. That's crazy. Anyway, episode number 50 is with Cynthia Johnson. Cynthia is a pro skier. She is just an awesome person. She was driving a bus when I saw her. Like, she like had, like, that's what she took to meet me. Not a bus. She's driving an ambulance. Like full time, like an old ambulance that she converted out. Like, it's super sick. But anyway, we talk about skiing, obviously. We talk about her pretty horrific leg injury related to pin bindings in Alaska, which was absolutely insane to hear about. And like, it's one of those things that you're like, you kind of know, you know, that there's a potential for like pretty serious injuries, especially if you do things incorrectly. And she's proof that, like, not that she did anything incorrectly. It's just like you lock your, like, it's like, it's about locking pin bindings, right? Like, you lock your shit. Shit can go wrong, you know? Like, that's why it's locked. That's why it's not like the ski mode they tell you it is. So anyway, her story was crazy. So I think you guys will be super psyched to hear about that. I don't know. This was a good episode. I was super excited to talk to her. She skis for a bunch of different companies, Icelandic, Giro Helmets. She's just a good person, super cool, fun, and I'm glad we got to do this episode. But before we jump into it, this episode is sponsored by Fisher Skis. I feel like you should know that by now, because this will be the third time I'm saying it this week. And actually, technically, like, when I record these like intro things, I'm doing them like back to back to back a lot of the time. So like, I've just said this same shit like three times in the last hour. So like, that's one of the things we wanted. And actually, the guys at Fisher wanted to not do was like be one of those sponsors where you're like, yeah, they're just paying him to say stuff. Like, it's not that kind of deal, right? Like, I'm psyched to be working with these guys and girls, because it's a cool company. It's a cool company to work with. I'm excited to be on board with the program, and I'm excited that they like what we're doing. Shout out to all of those guys. Like, it's a good program that they're on. The product is better than it's ever been. They're starting to actually make gear for what people want in North America, which is, like, I thought it was good stuff when they were just making the shit that they wanted to make over in Europe. And it was great stuff. But like, now we're starting to see stuff that's like, that's fun, that everybody should want to be on. Like, the Ranger Free boot is unbelievable. Like, it skis downhill so well. I feel like I'm actually just ranting right now, but I feel like people are going to get pissed at me if I keep just talking about this forever and ever and ever. The point is, they make dope shit. And that's the most professional plug that we're going to do for the day. But anyway, here's episode number 50 with Cynthia Johnson.
Yeah. Every year. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I'm a Denver native.
Cool.
So it's helpful to be nearby, and you know, I always utilize the trip as a good chance to catch up with the people of the city life.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Like, it's a pretty crazy scene, especially in there. Like, right now, like, yesterday was super busy. Like, it was probably the busiest I've seen this show in a long time.
Since interesting. People are eager to get up and get out. And
yeah. And it's weird. Like, I thought it was actually going to be a quieter show, you know, like, I didn't think that it was going to be as big, but it looks great. I mean,
it's interesting to think about how the outdoor industry is thriving, but at the same time, you know, struggling. It's like the people who are dedicated to it really make the effort to come out. And I think the transition to Denver as opposed to Salt Lake yeah. is huge. I think that's huge. I think people are just more attracted to be here. I think a lot more companies are based out of Denver. Yeah. There's just so much more going on and like support for the outdoor world. So I'm really hyped to have it be in Colorado.
It's a cool mix because like before when it was SIA, like when it was just SIA, it was just, I don't know, it was quieter, but, and I didn't even go to Outdoor Retailer, like, mm-hmm. In Salt Lake or wherever it was before. Like, I had no interest in it. I didn't need to. Like, SIA had everything, you know?
Right.
So it's nice for me because, like, it's, I don't feel like I'm missing a show because, like, mm-hmm. you do kind of have to go out and you're just, like, that's what these things are about, kind of just meeting people and talking to people, and that's essentially what the whole thing is, you know?
Right.
It's not a lot of actual working, I think. It's a lot of, like, networking, so.
Yes, exactly, and it's the classic of, you know, who you know,
yeah.
not what you know, and it's cool because a lot of the people who are the who you knows know a lot, so you learn a lot from your networks, which is
yeah.
cool. I think the outdoor industry is full of very, very creative, innovative, you know, really forward-moving minds, so it's a cool community to be a part of, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I'm a pretty shitty interviewer. So tell people who you are.
Okay.
What do you do?
Hi, my name is Cynthia Johnson, and I am a professional skier.
Is that all you do, just skiing?
Mostly, I mean, post-injury, I just kind of am coming back from injury, so I'm back into the customer service life, working at a fine dining French restaurant in Vail, cool. Colorado. Before that, I was also moving towards backcountry ski guiding. I started guiding in Colorado 4 years ago for Paragon Guides, and then started following Stellar Adventure Travel, which is run by Reggie Christ, through to South America, Japan, and Alaska.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What do you like about being a pro skier? Like what's the, I mean, cause it's, I think it's a thing that everybody wants to do and wants to be, but a lot of people don't know what it actually is, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I think especially with social media and things like that, we don't necessarily always show the hardships of it per se, you know, missing a powder day to get one photo, or, you know, the downfalls of having to go through things like injury or, you know, trying to, it's a lot. It's funny because my mom compares it a lot to acting. It's one of those things where, yeah. you know, you're kind of always waiting for your break. And there's a handful of people who are really, you know, making it and getting these high paid salaries. And then there's a lot of us that are, you know, doing it as passion projects almost. And we do it professionally because, you know, whether it is we get paid or that's what we spend, you know, our time, energy, and efforts towards. I think, you know, what it really means is having that network, like you're saying, with companies, and that's your big collaboration. So ultimately, what companies are doing these days is using athletes or even, you know, on a lower level, ambassadors or influencers as part of their marketing budget. So what we really are is marketing tools.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Do you like that? Do you like that, like being described that way in a way? Like, because you are, in a way, that's what the industry is, though, right? You're using people because of the platforms that they have and mm-hmm. because of what they do. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like it would bother me almost, you know?
Yeah, I think it's hard sometimes because you are very replaceable.
Yeah.
But I've found that I've had the most success and progress with companies that know me as an individual, as opposed to just as a skier, as opposed to just as a product. Mm-hmm. They actually, you know, stick with me because of my morals and my values and who I am as an individual. So I think it really depends on what kind of route you want to take. I think there's a lot of different routes you could take as a professional skier. Obviously, you know, there's the route where you are a downhill or a park and pipe athlete that I think they get the most, you know, exposure and therefore money, especially because of the Olympics, which is something that, thinking back to my career now, I would probably have wanted to go one of those routes because there's more stability with them and financial security, whereas I went more the free ride big mountain
yeah.
route. So I definitely competed for some time, but it's hard to have recognition because the venues aren't accessible and the actual competitions aren't broadcasted like something per se the Olympics or the downhill races.
Right.
So I think those are some routes that are different within the professional ski world. And then I think even to the point of being a ski instructor, you're professional skiing or, you know, you're a professional skier because you're using skiing as your mode of income and it's your career. So there's so many different routes you can take to actually, you know, have skiing be your profession. It's just a matter of, you know, how do you want to work with ski boots on is how I look at it. And I think I found a lot of success in guiding and a lot of reward because it gives me ability to kind of give back. Whereas with professional skiing, I really enjoy it because I feel like I'm, you know, influencing people and inspiring people. But guiding to me is a little bit more of like an immediate connection of seeing people excited to be out in the mountains.
Yeah, it's true. And I think guiding's one of... It's difficult, right? Like it's not an easy thing to do. Like people think that it's you're basically babysitting in a way, but
babysitting's easier.
Yeah. Yeah. You think so? Yeah.
Yeah. I babysit a lot actually. And like,
do you really?
I enjoy teaching kids skiing, like family, friends and stuff. And it's so much easier, like than guiding adults. I think it's difficult because there's these expectations that we all have as we come of age. And then there's the dollar sign behind it. So I think that was probably the biggest thing that deterred me from heli-ski guiding. It was kind of my ultimatum once I started guiding and professional skiing was I want to be a heli-ski guide. And I kind of worked my way up in Alaska to be doing that. And then I kind of had a realization that maybe, you know, this isn't what I want to do. It's a lot of responsibility. The helicopter adds a lot of risk. And I think that dollar sign that is behind, especially heli-ski clients, really forces decision-making that maybe wouldn't normally be made in an everyday situation because people are spending all this money. They have these high expectations. You take risks that you wouldn't normally take.
Mm. Yeah. It's not even a thing that I can even relate to guiding, you know, like it's like, I feel like I'm the one that needs to be guided most of the time, you know, like, so it's not a thing that like, I even understand, like, most of the time I'm 100% just focused on how I can make sure my own shit is together, like on the mountain. Mm-hmm. So like to be responsible for somebody else's shit being together is just crazy to me. Like I don't get it, but
yeah, it's actually a completely different form of skiing. I find the way that I'll ski while guiding, is completely different from when, you know, I'm free skiing or skiing as an athlete. I had actually had an experience in Japan where I guided a group of women for 2 weeks and everything was really successful. And then it was, you know, a deep powder day and I had a tail guide and I was lead guiding and I kind of decided to take off and, you know, do a little bit more free ride skiing. And then I found myself at the end of the slope looking up and not knowing where my clients were. And it took like 20 minutes or something to find one lady who had taken the wrong turn. So it was just like the perfect example of you really just can't focus on yourself and that's your job. So, it's very rewarding though, because people are just so excited to experience the mountains at the level that you do. So I really enjoy it.
So who are you skiing for now?
Right now I ski for Icelandic Skis, which is an awesome Colorado-based company. And that's kind of the company I was referring to in the sense of, you know, they really care about the individual, which I think is awesome.
Really
I mean, they're
that.
A smaller company too, which I think that's, it's helpful and it's hurtful. I mean, it's helpful because they have that relationship, but sometimes it's difficult to make decisions or find budget and things like that. So there's always going to be those differences. And then I also ski for Giro, which is a bigger company, and I love their stuff. And I ski for Astis Mittens, kind of those frilly,
frilly
awesome gloves, which was a funny story. I saw them in a Warren Miller movie maybe 5 or 6 years ago now and was just so obsessed and couldn't really find them anywhere because they were just getting started. And it was to the point where I love them so much, I like tried to make my own.
Yeah,
and
really?
They just like did not work out at all. It was just like I tried to like add fringes to these gloves and I was just like, oh man. And then I was killing some time working in Vail and went into Gorsuch.
Sick.
And saw that Gorsuch had the gloves and they were like, you know, $400 or something like that. And I was like, oh man, but I wanted them so bad. I said that year it was like my biggest purchase of like 2015 or 16 or whatever it was. And then I just started tagging them in social media. And then I think it was at an SIA show in Salt Lake City mm-hmm. that, you know, I found the booth and made that connection. And then, you know, yeah. after that, ever since, it's cool to have, you know, brands that you represent out of want.
Like that you actually know? Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's really yeah. easy to back them because it was something that I wanted that I purchased first too. That's actually how Icelandic worked for me as well. I was living in New Zealand and kind of had like a dream as I was coming up. It was my first like time with free ride comps and stuff. And I just thought Icelandic was the coolest company. And then yeah. it was just a friend of a friend knew the team manager and we just started this relationship and I didn't ski for them for, you know, a year and a half or 2 years. But whenever it was an industry thing, I would catch up with Scotty. And then, you know, 1 year I was just like, I'm ready to make the move to ski for you. And he was, you know,
yeah, Scotty's the shit. He's a good dude.
Yeah. And are you going to come to the party tomorrow?
I'm going to try. Yeah. I want to, it's like I have tickets already. For it. Yeah, I know, but I'm like super bad at, I need to figure it out.
Yeah. Party sure, buses, I think 4:30, 5:30.
It's crazy. That's like a fucking event, isn't it?
Yes. Like, isn't insane. That crazy?
Like that a company, and Icelandic's a great company and all, but that's a fucking huge event mm-hmm. for a ski company, any ski company, yes. never mind Icelandic, you know, it's like,
yes. Well, and that's where it's cool because, you know, they're Colorado based and they have the connection with Red Rocks. It's not like they're right. some big, you know, company just saying, hey, we want to rent out your venue. It's like Ben Anderson, you know, is born and bred in Colorado and has those connections with Red Rocks that, you know, it works. So there's definitely positives in being small and intimate. And then there's the positives of being large and funded.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Icelandic kind of has like that cult following too now. It's yes. like, it's pretty great. And part of it's like the graphics are...
They're amazing.
The best. Like, I mean, it's the best line in terms of just the way they look, I think, because it's art. It's literal artwork on every ski.
It is. And this coming years are amazing. They look so, you know, good. Different like nature scapes, like underwater and then in the flower field and then in the desert. So it's cool because yeah. they're all themed and then just the progression... It's interesting. I feel like I've kind of grown with the company, although I've only been skiing for them for, you know, 2.5 years. I feel like I kind of always followed them as being yeah. a Colorado native and just, you know, loving kind of what they stood for. I think their whole return to nature, 1 degree sort of thing yeah. is really important in a changing world. So I think it's good that they stay connected to the roots of, you know, why we love skiing, you yeah. know, is that connection to nature and that ability to get out and, you know, kind of reground yourself. So sometimes they're a little like esoteric, which I think for some consumers can be a little, you know, left field, but I think yeah. it resonates with me and that's what's really important.
Yeah. And I think it's starting to resonate more with customers too. Like it's a brand that people actually really want, you know, and it's interesting to see. 'Cause like originally it was like, what is that? You know, it's like, and now it's more like, oh yeah, like I need to have that, you know, it's like,
yeah, I think they were, things. You know, in the top five, I believe it was Free Skier did, you know, the top five brand recognition skis that people, you know, buy year after year. And I think they were the only like small kind of grassroots homegrown brand in there. It was all like the K2 Vocal
yeah.
sort of thing that have been around for years and they've gained that recognition and they're on just a whole nother platform of sales and production. So it was cool to see like, you know, a mom and pop shop pretty much. It's a family,
right.
you know, it's an individual owned, company to see them really succeeding and being recognized, which is not easy. And I know it took them, you know, I think just recently they've even just, you know, been making money. So yeah. it's just such a commitment. I think anything in the industry, I would say that's probably the biggest thing about professional skiing is, you know, obviously you have to have the skill and the talent and the drive, but I think more than anything, it's the dedication to the sport because I think a lot of people get discouraged and pick up day jobs and, you know, this and that. So I think it's just actually really being dedicated to the industry, to the sport, and to the progression of it.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting thing. Ski industry in general is a weird industry, right? Like it's unique, I guess, in the sense that like everybody just kind of has their own thing, right? Like everybody just does their own deal. I don't know. It's a weird industry, and I keep saying that, and I don't even really know how to like qualify what I'm saying. I guess you mm-hmm. just have to kind of be a part of the industry and figure yeah. out, and you kind of get
well,
it, you know?
Well, think about the ski industry, which I'm sure is true for almost every industry. So think about before, you know, social media.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. It was like there were still these people that were dedicated to a sport and to making it better and to progressing it. So I think it's that same effort because it's like what does skiing really accomplish, right?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's true. One yeah, of those I words. Mean, yeah.
It's like it really is, you know, it seems at first, and this is where I kind of struggled with professional skiing, and actually what led me into guiding was that I wanted to do something that was more altruistic, something yeah. that was more like giving back to communities and giving back to society. And that's where I found that guiding was so rewarding, because what you do when you ski is you create, you know, this joy and this euphoric experience within, which at first kind of seems, you know, self-interested, but when you really think about it, having that satisfaction and happiness within yourself allows you to share with others and, you know, be a positive impact in the world and et cetera, et cetera. So,
right.
you know, you got to think about, you know, if every individual found something that gave them that much joy, how much, you know, better the world would be.
Right. So I was having this argument last night with somebody. Do you think skiing's a sport?
Yes.
You think so?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If it wasn't, I would be really, really fat.
Yeah. I that's a good point. I guess that's a good argument. But that's the thing,
like,
right?
It's the amount of calories I eat compared to, like, you know, what else I do as activity or exercise or sport.
Yeah.
I think that for me, that kind of defines a sport as something that's, you know, it's metabolic. Active.
Yeah, I guess that it depends on your definition of sport too, I think. That's one right. of the bigger arguments is, like, for a lot of people, skiing is like, I keep comparing skiing to golf in a way that, like, there are people who treat it like a sport right. and that are really good at it at a high level, but mm-hmm. most people do it as a hobby. Like, they just go.
Well, and that's interesting too that you say that, because that makes me think, is a sport defined by that somebody wins and somebody loses?
Yeah. That, you know, I think that's
skiing,
more.
There's not that doesn't happen unless there's, you know, competition.
Yeah.
But I guess that's true with any, you know, sport. There can be, you know, your NBA finals versus your pickup game at the local whatever. But I guess yeah. somebody still is
but
winning.
But they're still winning. Yeah, that's the true. Thing. So that's kind of the mm-hmm. argument, right? Is like, it, what is it? Like, I don't have a problem with it being a sport or not being a sport,
I
guess.
We should look
so
up
like,
the Webster's Dictionary of
we should, yeah.
of sport.
That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, what is a sport?
Yeah, what is a sport? Somebody should email it. We'll figure out what a sport
yes,
is.
Yes, yeah. TBT.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So you've had some injuries, right?
Yeah. I mean, not really some. I had, you know, I broke a wrist years ago and, you know, still was skiing Woodward, which was pretty rad, and, you know, twisted a knee, like nothing, you know, snapped or broke. But about almost 2 years ago now, it was in May. I was on a glacier camping trip in Haines, Alaska. It was after the heli season was over. And some friends of mine, a photographer, a guide, the photographer's girlfriend, now wife, and I decided to go, you know, set up camp, which was my first experience doing that. I mean, I'd gone camping in the wilderness, gone winter camping, you know, plenty of hut trips, but never really that glacier environment, which is a big kind of iconic Alaska
yeah.
check mark to, you know, complete as, you know, a backcountry mountaineer type. And, you know, the avalanche danger was super high, so we kind of had to stay off a lot of the big lines that I wanted to ski. But, you know, the skiing was awesome. We were waiting till the pink light of Alaska, you know, that alpenglow. So at that time of the year, you know, at that latitude, it was maybe 8:30 at night. So I skied a pretty big line, and then the line finished with a natural feature, which, you know, I'd been eyeing the whole trip. And the trick that I was mastering at that point was a Lincoln loop. So I skied the line, went to do the Lincoln loop, kind of sped check it. So I took off a little bit early. And, you know, in any other situation, my ski would have popped off. But I was in what we call the Dinafit death mode, which is when you lock your bindings
yeah,
out.
Yeah.
Which is still, I mean, to this day, I'll never go pins because of my personal experience. But looking back on it, you know, it was one of those where I'd even had the conversation with the guide of like, do you lock them out? Do you not? It's just like kind of like, who's to say what? But per se, my ski would have popped off on the top line. It was a no, you know, it was like a no fall zone.
Yeah.
The whole line was above cliffs.
Right.
So they were locked out. And I had just gotten finished with heli season, so I wasn't really in, you know, the mindset of tech bindings. So I spiral fractured my tib fib.
Ugh.
And, you know, it's 9 o'clock at night. I was able to, like, one ski back to camp because we were relatively close. You know, obviously in a lot of shock and adrenaline looking back, because I was like, oh, I just think I, you know, twisted my leg. It's yeah. no big deal. They were like, well, you know, do you want to try to get out of here? And, you know, our freaking U.S. minds goes directly to insurance of helicopter. I'm like, that's going to be expensive. You know, I've paid for an ambulance ride in my day. And, you know, that wasn't a fun bill that didn't get paid right away either.
Definitely not.
So, you know, that's where my mind went. I was like, hell no. And I called the pilot. The pilot had already gone home. He said he could come back and pick us up at daybreak. You know, I decided against the helicopter and therefore waited the night out. And, you know, looking back on the situation, the plane got me the next morning. I remember I'd broken my fibula kind of up towards my knee. So I was just laying there convinced that I, you know, twisted a knee as well.
Yeah.
And it happened to be Cinco de Mayo, so tequila was my painkiller, which worked really well.
I'm sure, yeah.
And I had, you know, never realized the power of alcohol until I used it as, like, a true painkiller, which was absolutely amazing. Until about 3 a.m. when I sobered up and woke up and was like, oh, my gosh, what time is it? There's nothing I can do until I see daylight.
Yeah.
So the pilot came and, you know, I made it back to the Haines Clinic. There's no hospital in this like small town of Haines. It's maybe 2,000 people. And it was really like interesting because as soon as the doctor, you know, told me I was going to need surgery, that's when it like hurt.
Yeah.
I was like immediately, I was like, oh no, like I'm in pain. This sucks. So it was like a huge decision to try to get me back to Colorado to rehab because I wouldn't be able to fly, you know, after the surgery. And I wanted to, you know, be with family after the experience. But I think, you know, looking back on it, it was a big learning experience in the sense of, you know, taking extreme precautions. And, you know, I could have had compartment syndrome or something more severe, you know, staying on the glacier for a night.
Right.
You know, that really could have led to death, which is a crazy, you know, reality to be like, whoa, this was, you know, that was kind of my like flash of the light or whatnot, or my, you know, one of nine lives or whatever it may be. I think in just like moving forward, just being as prepared as you can for the worst situation because, you know, you never expect it. And then also, you know, if you're not the person in the situation to really advise people to take the extremes, you know, I'm sure that I would have, if I would have gotten the helicopter ride out, there would have been some sort of, you know, patient forgiveness or something like that. Or, you know, like in Colorado, if you have your fishing license, you get backcountry rescue. So
really?
You get, so like by having a fishing license, you can get like evacuated from the backcountry for free.
No shit.
Which is huge.
That's crazy.
So I think just being aware of those things, because none of us ever think that we're going to be the victim or the person. But yeah, so that was a really crappy injury. I was on crutches all summer and then had big plans with Icelandic plan for the coming season, including a trip to Japan and then up to Alaska. And so I was like, I got to get this hardware out because it was really bothering me. So I got the hardware out and then ended up getting a staph infection.
Oh, that's
sucks.
Then
I had to have another surgery. So that's awful. Was just like such a huge lesson of patience and of, you know, just like accepting. And I really had to practice like turning envy into like joy for others.
That's a hard thing, huh?
Yeah, which is
I'm super bad at
that.
Like, no way. I like, I tore my ACL in the spring and like, it was not even in the, I did it in like February. And then all of a sudden we just started getting hammered with snow. And I was like sitting on a couch, not skiing at all, like just fucking hobbling around. And I was so pissed at everyone. I was so mad. Like there was no way that you're going to tell me like, oh yeah, like be positive about anything. Yeah, like, and like, I can't even imagine like, fuck that. Like if you got hurt and then had to get another surgery, I would literally be like, fuck Instagram, fuck all, like I'm good. Like see you later, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's,
well, it was hard too, because they were, you know, projects that I had proposed and then I just had to like watch people, you know, take my budget and run.
God,
like, have fun. Bye.
That sucks.
And it was, yeah, it was really challenging, but I think it was super powerful. I think pretty much anyone you talk to who has come back from injury sees it as, you know, a positive experience.
Yeah.
You know, especially mentally. And that, like, at this point, I'm still, you know, getting my ski legs back under me. I'm not skiing 100%, but I think that's wise for me to, you know, take my time. But I also learned, you know, how important patience is and like how irrelevant time becomes, you know, when you're not doing what you love. Mm-hmm. You know, that time just seemed like forever. Whereas, you know, my 25 years of skiing every day, you know, those become, you know, like the most important time. So at this point, I'm more focused on skiing every day that I choose to, as opposed to like where my head was when I went to throw the Lincoln Loop, was, you know, completely pushing and progressing the sport as a female. And hopefully I'll get back to that, because that's, you know, how we do push the sport. But I think you just have to like respect the progress.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird thing. And I think it teaches you kind of something about yourself and how to handle situations that suck and that you don't really have control over. I think that's one of the bigger things with injuries in general, is like, you just kind of have to deal with it. There's no way out of it, you know?
Exactly. So. Well, and for me, you know, getting the hardware out, I mean, not to say staff wasn't inevitable. It was just that like pressure to move things faster.
Yeah.
Actually slowed them down.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a crazy thing. So what do you ski with for bindings now? If you aren't using pin bindings, what are you using, frame?
So I'll usually, I mean, for touring, I just got the Shift Lab,
cool,
which I'm pretty hyped about. I still feel like a little timid on them, like going full send.
Yeah,
it's a little
weird, yeah.
But I really like the cast system.
Yeah,
I have an old school pair of cast systems. I'm really hyped to get the new FKSs, but I think that's just like the end all be all for free ride skiing. And then, you know, for a long tour sort of day, like I'm thinking springtime couloirs, long approaches, I'll go the Shift Lab. Like I won't even touch a kingpin.
No, fucking kingpin anyway. But I mean, it's like that cast system. I think we're gonna have them on soon. Like it's fucking genius.
It's so genius, and like the ability that they made that you can do it like on your whole quiver. You know, you just have to buy the heel pieces.
It's super smart.
It's super smart. And at first, you know, like I wasn't a big FKS person because I didn't grow up skiing park, but I have that binding setup on, you know, a pair of like 125s, and they're my favorite ski. Like the full rocker is part of it, but I think a lot of it is that like connection to ski that you get in that binding that I haven't felt in like any other binding. It's an interesting, like,
I think it's the best binding that anybody
so
makes.
So solid.
I think it really is the best binding that anybody makes. I tell people all the time, and like it is a little annoying, like if you're in deep snow, to get back into it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a problem that people have with it. But honestly, like, and I think it's less of an issue with the 18. Like, I don't think the 18 is as bad. Like, the 12 and 14 are a little more.
Right. Or just like the pivot can be funny. Like, somebody said something, you know, against them for heli skiing because, you know, you have like kind of difficult positions where you're standing to actually get into your ski, and that can't always be, you know, it's not really straightforward. You can't just like, you know, slap your foot around and like hope that it connects. It's more like you really have to be specific with it. But in the end of the day, it's one of those where it's like, obviously it was human error. It was human error that was connected to, you know, gear error.
Right.
So it's just like and that's probably a big, you know, thing to talk about, like why these shows happen. It's like, why can't you just like ski your same skis? It's like, it's always progressing so much that you have to have the best gear. And it kind of seems crazy to be like, you have to have next year's gear. But in my situation, it's like,
it's important.
I broke my leg because of, you know, using the gear incorrectly or using the wrong gear because that was what was convenient.
Do you think it's incorrectly though? Like, because like, I agree with what you said about like, if you don't lock it, I think it's way worse to be in, like to have your ski come off in a no fall zone, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I lock my pin shit always. Like, it's like, and it's dumb, and I know if I crash hard, I'm gonna regret it, and I'll be in pain, I'm sure. But it's like, that's kind of the trade-off, right?
Well, so and that's the funny thing. I mean, me 2 years after this injury, right, I would still be having the same question. Do I lock them or do I not?
Yeah.
You know, that answer hasn't been solved besides something like the Shift Lab.
Yeah.
Or, which I think there's still a little, you know, finicky to that, where that's where we go into this cast system where it's like your downhill on the downhill.
It's simple.
Your pins on the up. It's a couple extra moving parts. And like the original system, there was a little bit of issues like putting the bindings in and out, especially when it got cold. But I just carried some windshield de-icer.
Really?
Just spray it right on there. They slide in and slide out. But it seems like they've solved that issue with just having it be, you know, the screws as opposed to a whole plate, which saves you weight too. So, I mean, I don't ski for cast, but maybe I will after this.
Yeah, no, for sure. I need to work on that too. Like, I think that shit is so dope.
And it's created by free riders.
You know what I mean? It's it looks burly. That's like, and it doesn't add a whole bunch of complication that doesn't need to be added. Like, that's one of my big things. Is like, I really like the Shift. I've said it before, and I really do think it's the best AT binding right now, because you can ski it hard.
A touring binding, whereas maybe like AT would be bigger.
I don't even know. Like, it's like all these categories fuck shit up. This is Ethan, by the way.
Hey.
Ethan finally fucking showed up, but does nothing all week shows up 2 days late in the middle of an interview. So
nice. Welcome.
Yeah, it is what it is.
So that's, you know, where I think with anything that is invention, the best things come from a need.
Yeah.
You know, so they saw a need for something. I don't think that these two dudes out of Driggs were like, we want to be entrepreneurs, inventors. I think they're like, we need something that, you know, will work for our style of skiing. And so that's probably what I'll use in moving forward.
Yeah.
But it's ironic that if I went back to my Dina Fits or went back to my Kingpins, I'd be in that same question of do I or do I not?
Yeah, it's true.
It's really interesting to like watch other skiers now. And I think I always did was like, do they lock them? Do they not? Like, does it make
I
you
always
like
wondered that at first.
You do? Or
dude,
does
I came
it make
out
you like not badass if you don't? Like,
I remember I was like, I turned hard once, you know, on a pair of Kingpins. Not even on a pair of Radicals.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to shit on Kingpins, but it's not this time. It wasn't their fault.
Bindings.
Yeah, in general, but. So, and I came out and I was like, there's no, I just am turning. Like, it was like, I turned hard, but I was just turning. There's no reason my ski, and from that on, like, I was just like, there's no point when I want to come out. Like, I don't want to be coming out. Like,
right.
Pretty much ever. Like, I guess if I have to, I have to. Like, if I'm in the woods or some shit like that, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and that's my recommendation for people. It's like, what's your objective with this ski? Are you going to skin up the mountain at night to get exercise? Okay. Maybe you can do.
Right.
You know, a tech binding. And then I think a big part of it too is like your size and ability.
Right.
You know, if you're a heavier, aggressive skier, you know, it's just not built for you, but the weight does make a difference. So.
Yeah. And I definitely don't want to like promote locking your shit to people.
I
don't think that's a smart thing either.
I don't think the brand would. I'd be interested to see like what a Dinafit rep or a Kingpin rep, like what's.
They tell you to ski it and ski.
Right.
Like in the ski mode.
Yeah,
that's what they tell you. They're like, does it say ski or does it say lock? Like, it's like, I asked before and they gave me one of those and I was like, well, it fucking comes off. Like, you know, like, so like, there's no good answer. But anyway, enough about shitty bindings. Or good bindings either way.
Yes.
What else you got going on?
Well, currently, right now, so I've got kind of a lot going on. Everything was in progression to move towards Alaska, and then I kind of realized that that's maybe not where I want to live, but what big project that I was working on there was I had Mike Bassich, who's a radical snowboarder out of Tahoe. He started a little ski hill on Donner Pass. He donated me his rope toe.
Cool.
So I have a rope toe.
Cool.
And that's that. So anybody with property that wants to collaborate, holler at me. We could start a little ski hill. The initiative was really something for, you know, underprivileged children.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my goal still. Alaska just seemed far and dark. And
it is dark.
I mean, I loved it. But I think maybe even, you know, later in life too, it's one of those where I think I had to move like really, really far away from home to realize that I just like wanted to live at home.
Yeah.
You know, I think being from Colorado was always hard because so many people came from the East Coast to the Midwest and were like, well, I found the glory land. And I was like, oh, I want to find, you know, the glory
find
land.
My glory land.
Yeah. And then just accepting that, you know, I got off the bus from skiing Eastvale the other day and was walking down the street and ran into my mom walking the dog. And I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like I actually really, really like that aspect of, you know, living, living at home sort of thing, like living where I grew up, which I think, you know, is actually really traditional if you think about cultures in the past. But I think it's kind of interesting these days because everybody wants to like go and start their own lives and, you know, do their own thing. And it's just like, I've actually accepted that, you know, I liked my upbringing and I was connected to it and I'm totally cool with, you know, staying local and being in Colorado. And then, so that's one project. If anybody has any ideas with that, it's, you know, it's a big one. So I just am learning to be patient with it. And like I said, it's really, you know, the idea is to help underprivileged people, you know, find that joy and that passion in skiing like I did. And then my other big thing that's happening is I bought a retired ambulance that's like slowly being converted into like the shred wagon. Yes. So that's kind of fun and kind of saving money this season, saving money through the summer, with intentions of kind of doing a, you know, Powder Highway sort of situation. My, my dream trip would be to do like an Alaska to Patagonia.
Sick.
So do the whole situation, maybe follow the river, something about the water, transitions. I don't know. We'll see. I'm still getting back into the mindset of, you know, project proposals and things like that. It took a lot to, you know, just heal. Like, I'm sure you understood, like it takes like a lot of calories, a lot of mental capacity, energy, all of that just to like, you know, get your body back to where it wants to be and your mind. And it's actually an incredible, you know, transition that we can go through. I mean, I thought about it a lot with my leg, like without modern medicine, like,
It's a wrap.
Right. Like, and like, was that, should have that been that my, that, you know, my time to go? Like, is medicine, you know, it's always a hard, like, you know, the progression of humanity, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, what's actually supposed to be within our control and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty, I don't know. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, like, how you feel during it. Like, I'm super thick-headed. I'm, like, super thick-headed. So, like, when I, whenever they're like, oh, yeah, it takes 6 months to be better, and then, like, 9 months to return to activity, in my head I'm like, okay, so we can cut 3 months down to when I'm, like, doing good, and then, like, 5 months I can ski again. And, like, it's just, like, you just get in this mindset where you just want to fucking just go, but you can't. You gotta fucking be a little patient. Like, it's like, it's crazy. So I don't know, but
yeah it is. The mind versus the body is a weird the mind is such like a thing of its own. Like to think of my mind as like a friend as opposed to like myself. You know, because you're like, that's an interesting idea. You know, like, let me ponder on that for a minute as opposed to always going with that, because I think a lot of times like the mind will go against the body or the mind will go against the heart. But sometimes it's good to, you know, follow that push of the mind, you know, because the body might be, would be more hesitant or something like that. So
yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this is your plug. So where can people find you on social media if people want to know more about you? Where do they go?
My social media is Send It Cynthia. I also have a website, Send It Cynthia, that needs some work, but that can lead you to operations that I'm guiding with, projects that I'm working on, and that sort of thing. So yeah, follow along.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. That was episode 50. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I definitely did. It's good to hear about an injury that like somebody is still able to turn around, which, I mean, she's killing it right now. She's starting to get back like at full strength, and yeah, I'm sure she's going to get there. I'm psyched for her. I can't wait to see what she does in the future. So definitely give her a shout on Instagram. If you listen to this episode, it's just Send It Cynthia, which is exact. I mean, I don't even know why I would have to spell that out for you, so I'm not gonna. Send It Cynthia on Instagram. But yeah, and obviously we're at Out of Podcast. If you don't follow us now, I don't know. I was gonna say something like confrontational, but I'll avoid that for right now. Anyway, be sure to like, rate, review the show all on all mediums. Like, that always helps. Like, that helps other people find the show. Like, I think you guys think that I want to do it for me. I don't really care. Like, I don't like soliciting. I've said this before. I don't like soliciting sponsors. I don't like soliciting reviews. I don't like soliciting any of that stuff. I want it to be all natural. But this is one of the things that, like, without this, it's going to be harder for people to find the show. I want people to be able to listen to this shit if they like listening to morons like me just ramble about nothing, you know? I mean, granted, I do know some stuff about some stuff, but some stuff is about as vague as you can get. So yeah, I don't even remember where I was going with that. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.